Blog Talk Radio.
Thing. Everyone, welcome to another Black Shoe Diaries podcast. Welcome to this episode of the BSD Basket Bros Show. I'm your host, as usual, Bill DeFilippo. Going to be a weird show tonight. It was a very ugly week for Penn State basketball. Of course, the Nittany Lions started the week by falling to Ohio State in Columbus, 75-55. Then there was a really, I think unfortunate is the word I'm looking for, unfortunate loss against Maryland at Penn State on Valentine's Day. Of course, there was a very controversial foul call. We're going to talk about both of those games, just try to get some kind of sense for what happened. And it's kind of two different types of what happened. Why did Penn State get blown out, and what the hell happened, and whether it was mostly on the refs that Penn State fell to Maryland. That's usually not the case. That may have been the case here. We're going to try and get a little deeper into that. But, of course, we're going to break down Penn State's two games this week. The Nittany Lions have to go against one of the best teams in America, in Wisconsin, at home, and then a very winnable game, but could be a very tough game on the road at Northwestern. Before we go anywhere, let me introduce the other two people joining me tonight. As usual, Chad Markulis. Chad, what's going on, man?
Same old, same old.
Yeah, I don't know if anything sums up Penn State basketball better than same old, same old. And we have a very special guest on this episode of the pod. He is a friend of the site, a friend of mine personally, someone who he forgot more about Penn State basketball this morning than I've ever known about it. Friend of the site, Penn State alumnus, writer and editor, former editor-in-chief of Slam Magazine, Mr. Ryan Jones. Ryan, you on the line here?
I'm here, man. What's going on?
Not much. How you doing?
I'm doing well. The kids, I just got the kids to bed, so I can focus on the uplifting, life-affirming thing that is Penn State basketball.
Penn State basketball is many things, and if there are two things that I am sure it's not, most of the time that is uplifting and life-affirming. I mean, the one time a year when Penn State takes down like a top 10 team, it's pretty uplifting, but outside of that, it's a lot of sadness, just a lot of really unfortunate instances, and one of those happened last week when Penn State traveled to Ohio State, took on the Buckeyes, and this was just one of those games where everything that could go wrong basically did go wrong. Penn State had two players in double digits. DJ Neuville had 16 points on 5 of 13 shooting. Brandon Taylor had 11 points on 4 of 9 shooting, which for Penn State you would assume is very good. And then for Ohio State, they are just such a good, dynamic, athletic team, and a team that Penn State does not match up very well against. And that was obvious from the onset. The Buckeyes jumped out to what was a 12-0 lead, and they just never looked back. So, Chad, how discouraged should Penn State fans be after a loss of this caliber? Should they be upset that it was a blowout, or did it make sense that this is what happened against Ohio State?
There's no reason to be discouraged considering how they kind of bounced back against Maryland to an extent. Ohio State's just playing really well right now. They have probably one of the best freshmen in the country in D'Angelo Russell. 7 assists, 17 points. He's an NBA. He's a top 3 pick in the draft next year, I think. Sam Thompson had a really good game, and, they have 2 or 3 other guys that are clicking along with Russell. They're pretty tough to beat, so. Not a whole lot that, I mean, Penn State didn't play well by any stretch of the imagination, but, I don't think that Unite the best, they wouldn't have beaten Ohio State on Wednesday.
Yeah, Ryan, kind of the same question to you. What was your, general takeaway from the loss to the Buckeyes?
I didn't see the whole thing, but of what I saw and what I've seen of Ohio State this year in general, I mean, similar to what Chad's saying, that's a really good team, talent-wise. They've got four guys probably who are on the level, you know, as far as overall athleticism and basketball ability of our one guy who's at that level. And that's the case, you know, where we are right now, where Penn State is right now. When you play, you know, teams of that caliber that recruit the way Ohio State regularly recruits, you know, you've got to be at your absolute best to hang with those guys. And even then, they're going to have the athleticism across the board and, you know, the combination of size, speed, skill set, whatever across the board that Penn State right now just doesn't have and generally has not had. So, you know, you're going to beat those teams on nights where you can slow things down a little bit and the other team's going to miss shots and you're going to take, you know, you're not going to turn it over too much and you don't have to play perfect, but you've got to play really, really well in those situations. And so I don't, as a fan, I don't get that bummed out, you know, when you go on the road and lose by, you know, 15 or 20 to Ohio State, if I feel like the effort's there. And for the most part, I think, you know, and again, from what I saw that game and for most of what I've seen at Penn State this year, I don't feel like these guys aren't trying. And so those are going to happen sometimes when you play teams that are that talented. And so that one, you know, that one didn't bother me all that much. It's not fun to watch, obviously. But, you know, you're going to get a few of those at this point when you've got a team near the top of the league against a team near the bottom of the league, you know, especially on the road. Those you're going to take a couple of those sometimes. It was like Wisconsin at the beginning of the season. You can't really put too much onto that. And so, yeah, it was not fun. But, you know, you're going to get those every now and then.
Yeah, and one thing that you kind of mentioned in your explanation was just the athletes that Ohio State has, not even necessarily the caliber of basketball player they have, and they have some really fantastic basketball players. It's just Ohio State is filled with guys who are bigger, who are faster, who are stronger, who can jump higher, who can do – they're just bred to play basketball, and those aren't really the kinds of guys that – Penn State gets, like, even DJ Newbill, for how great of a basketball player he is, he's not exactly the most spectacular athlete in the world. And this certainly was one of those games where, from the get-go, you could just tell that Ohio State's athleticism was going to be really difficult for Penn State to deal with all night. Correct? Am I wrong in that, Chad, or am I right in that?
You're correct.
And
I know it's tough because, Chad, you want to tell Bill that he's wrong, just on principle, but it's one of those times where he's making a point that we have to agree with, right?
Right. He's throwing a softball there, so I can't really say anything about that.
For those of you who don't like, follow us on Twitter, my job during the day is to be Ryan's punching bag, so we're going to see a lot of that throughout this episode of the pod. But, yeah, I mean, Ryan, did you kind of get that same vibe just watching Ohio State? I don't want to say Penn State was helpless, but it was one of those situations where everything Penn State did, it was just going to struggle against the caliber of basketball player and athlete that Ohio State has.
Yeah, they, you know, again, it's the level of recruiting that you want to get to, and it's where I think, you know, if you look at the guys that Pat has coming in next season, you know, it's the kind of recruits that for the first time in my lifetime, basically, Penn State has a chance to get a couple guys who are on that level. And so that's what we're trying to get. But, you know, that's where everybody's trying to get, where you're one of those programs that is pulling, you know, those top 75, top 100 kids who are, you know, athletes, who are, you know, who have the size and the skill set and the athleticism to really be a problem on both ends all over the court. You know, Penn State has really so rarely had guys in the perimeter who can shoot and are 6'5", and can dribble. You know, you get guys who can shoot, but they're 5'10", or you get guys who can dribble, but they're 5'8", or you get guys who can, you know, get to the basket, but can't shoot. And that's what most guys are that, you know, in the country. And so the elite teams tend to get the guys who can do, you know, all those things, or two or three of those things at least. And most of the rest of the country struggles to get those guys. And Penn State traditionally has not gotten those guys. Teams like Ohio State on the run certainly have been under Thad Matta, tends to get guys like that, and the top programs do. And so, yeah, that's most nights, if you put, you know, the current kind of guys that Penn State have, and again, I like these guys. I like the work ethic with this squad. I like the young guys. I think the veterans in this team, for the most part, with the exception of DJ, obviously, who's just a terrific basketball player all the way around, you know, there's a lot of guys in this team who you know, are sort of limited, but they, you know, at their best, they're really making the most out of the one or two things they do well. But when you go up against those teams that have three or four or five or six guys who do a bunch of things well, you know, it's going to be tough.
Chad, just whether you want to go looking at the box score or from your recollection of the game, I think I know your answer to this, but is there one person whose performance in this game especially stuck out to you for Penn State, either for good or for bad, other than Alan Wisniewski and his 2 minutes and one for one from the field?
Right. I was going to say Alan had a nice little cameo, but I mean, Julian Moore was really involved when he was in the game. On KenPom's box court, says he was involved in 36% of the possessions, which is a lot for him. You know, usually, you know, we'll get a couple post moves in, but, you know, he has a couple plays where, you know, if he's a little bit stronger, if you're, you know, next year, it's a play you could see him making. But, you know, he's shown some ability in the post to at least get in position to make those easy shots that, you know, Jordan Dickerson and Donovan Jack haven't really been able to do this year. So just a little tiny nugget there that Penn State can take out of that game. But other than that, you know, the finishing's not there yet, and nobody else really stood out as far as non-DJ Newbill players. So, you know, like you guys were saying, Ohio State just has talent and athleticism all across the board. You know, I'm trying to think of, is there one player on Ohio State that wouldn't be, like, the second option on Penn State? I can't really think of anybody. Like, you know, Kata Bates-Jopp got 18 minutes. He's a freshman. He would easily be, you know, second or third option on Penn State. You know, Jayshon Tate, Amir Williams, Shannon Scott, you know, all these guys that are just – they have the ability that, you know, Penn State just doesn't have that raw talent right now. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, even a hurt Mark Loving would have probably killed Penn State. It was just one of those games where when you look at it, Penn State was hung with Ohio State on the boards. They actually did very well in offensive rebounding, but it was just one of those games where everything went well for Ohio State. And Ryan, kind of the same question I asked Chad, were there any players on Penn State who, for good or for bad, their performance really stuck out to you?
No.
All right.
I mean, I can elaborate, but no, I mean, it is one, you know, I'm looking back over the box score now, and it's one of those, like, you know, DJ had a pretty solid night, you know, 16, you know, didn't shoot great, but didn't shoot bad, you know, particularly knowing the defensive attention he gets. You know, Brandon made threes that night. When he makes threes, you know, he's a threat. You know, Shep, 3 of 11, you know, okay, not great, but still a freshman coming in and at least showing the fearlessness that he's shown, the willingness to take shots, to try to make things happen. You know, Jordan 0 for 1, you know, some nights he gets a few more chances, and, you know, but he's never, you know, not certainly not a guy they're drawing up plays for, we know that. You know, Gino, an 0 for 6 night, again, a freshman, he's at least trying to get things done. So, yeah, it's another one of those. I mean, I agree with Chad, and Julian is definitely showing flashes. I'm really excited about his future. But, yeah, that's not – I don't think there's a lot more to say about that one personally. Bill, if you want to keep talking about this game, I will, but I'm just saying.
I was going to say one last thing very quickly. I think this was kind of one of those games where we saw the good and the bad of Geno Thorpe. I mean, on offense, he definitely struggled. But on defense, we went into this game thinking that if Geno Thorpe is able to – and DJ Newell and everyone are really able to put the clamps on D'Angelo Russell on that side of the ball, and on the defensive side of the ball, and really take the game out of his hands – Penn State is going to have a really good chance at winning this. And, yes, while he had 17, 7-6, a fantastic game, but he didn't shoot very well from the field. A lot of his points came from just being aggressive and getting to the free throw line and drawing fouls and things of that nature. But definitely it is a positive sign to watch how Gino and DJ and whoever else were guarding Russell on that side of the ball. Just the last thing I want to touch on before we leave this game, and this is something that I wrote in my in the recap, was the play of Julian Moore, 12 minutes, 2 of 6 from the field, so not spectacular, 3 rebounds, 4 points. So it wasn't a fantastic game, but I was so impressed with what we've seen out of Donovan Jack this year and the way that he has kind of struggled to find a role on offense and to get things going on offense. And then what we've seen from Jordan Dickerson and how his offensive game is kind of limited to just putbacks and tip slams and things of that nature, I would argue that right now the best big man on Penn State's roster is Julian Moore. Chad, what do you think about that?
It's not really a tough competition to win at the moment, but I don't know. Donovan Jack has his moments. I think when he's at his best, he's probably the best of the three, but, you know, he just hasn't shown this year. He had flashes. Like, being last year, he was awesome. Back when nobody had really a scouting report on him and his three-point shot was working pretty well. But, you know, teams are kind of keen in on him, but they know what he's about now. So, he's a limited ceiling as a player, and I think we're kind of seeing him plateau a little bit. So, yeah, Julian Moore definitely has the most upside out of the three, but, you know, nobody's really doing that much to, like, make it a tough competition for Julian Moore to win. So, good to see him play like this, but still some room to grow.
Ryan, do you want to see more of Julian Moore? Or just in general, with kind of the way this season looks like it's going to go, do you want to see some more of the young guys, or do you want to see guys – like Jordan Dickerson and Donovan Jack get some run and continue to help this team build towards maybe doing something at the end of this year? It's going from Penn State doing something at the end of the year to Penn State maybe doing something at the end of the year. But, yeah, do you want to see more Julian Moore? Do you want to see Dickerson and Jack and stuff and more of a rotation up front?
Yeah, I'm always – stuff like this is always tough because, you know, you can't see – you know, we don't get to watch practice and – you know, you hear little bits and pieces from now and then. I mean, the one little tidbit I heard from practice kind of recently was just about how you're watching him in drills and stuff like that, Moore's skill set just stands out, you know, head and shoulders above the other front court guys. But he is still raw. You know, he's very, very raw. We know this. But the ceiling is no question. You know, Jordan has played some really nice minutes this season, but offensively very, very limited. He has most of his impact on the defensive end. Donovan, like I was saying, I mean, you get the little bits that you get from him, but it's kind of few and far between. Brandon, that tweener, we know about Brandon. So, I mean, again, there's just not a lot of options for what Penn State has in the front court right now. All that said, I believe that Pat's trying to put his best guys on the floor. I don't think he's trying to give, the bigs, the veteran guys, minutes, because, like it's their last stretch of their senior year or whatever. I think it's about he's trying to put the best combination on the floor. You know, certainly we've seen Ross's role diminish a little bit, which has, been a bummer. To sort of not see him finishing a little stronger. My belief is that, Pat is giving Julian the minutes that he feels he can handle right now and be effective and try to put the best team out there that he can to win every night. And so I think that, if Julian gets more minutes now, it'll be because he deserves them now, that he's ready to play, 25 or 30, if that's the case. And my guess is that as far as overall conditioning, strength, all of that as a young guy, that maybe he's just not quite there yet. It's not one of those things where I'm like, yeah, just put him out there, start him playing 35 minutes the rest of the way. He's getting plenty of experience. He'll get plenty more over the next couple of weeks. And obviously he's going to get a ton of work over the summer and preseason and be in a great position, to hopefully start next season and be improved and really make an impact on the league next year. So I'm not sweating that too much right now. We know, unfortunately, we're not an NCAA tournament team this year. Hopefully there's some sort of postseason where they get a chance to play a few more games, get a little more experience, but yeah, I'm not sweating that too much. I get the impulse to feel that way, definitely, because you're like, we're not playing for NCAA at this point, so let's just run the kids out there. But most of the young guys are getting a lot of key minutes, and I think that'll continue.
All right, and don't say no NCAA tournament. There's still the Big Ten tournament, which Penn State's going to win, so keep your chin up.
I never rule anything out, absolutely. Never.
I envy your optimism, Bill.
I don't think I've ever said anything that was dripping with more sarcasm. let's put a nice little bow on the Ohio State game. When the biggest takeaway from a game is that one of the blogs that live tweeted the game was retweeting pictures of dogs, there's probably something not good there. But let's just jump right into Maryland. As we know, Penn State fell to Maryland 76-73. There was a very controversial call at the end of the game, and we are going to get to that.
I was just going to take issue with the word controversial. That's like a pet peeve of mine. The word controversial implies that, like, there are really strong differing opinions to what happened, and there's only one rational thought on what happened in that play. So can we not use the word controversial anymore tonight, though? Because we all know what actually happened on that play.
You don't see our Twitter mentions, which is my report to you. Because there have been Maryland fans who are adamant that...
They don't count. I'm not talking about Maryland fans. They don't count. I'm not...
Okay,
you've seen those people. Come on. We're not worried about them.
Sorry. I just get very upset when I talk about not rivals beating us.
Yeah, there you go.
So let's just, before we get into talking about that call, let's start with the positives. Let's start with the good things about this game. Ryan, what were some of the good things that you saw out of Penn State in this game?
Well, I mean, for the second time this season, you know, they've gone up against the top 20 team once in the road, against this particular top 20 team once in the road, once in home, and really played them, you know, kind of punch for punch most of the way through. So that's, you know, this is a team that is now 3-10 of the Big Ten, you know, back-to-back against this top 20 team has been right there with them. So, I mean, that's definitely a positive. But, you know, and that's been the case with a lot of Penn State games this season, obviously, as we all know. You know, I mean, DJ, you know, as we're so used to now, I mean, 25 for him, which is one of his better games lately, you know, but – again, we know the defensive attention he's getting night in, night out. We know the teams are focused on him, and he's still doing it. He's still performing. He's still getting to the line. He's still finding ways to score. You know, and I'm looking back over the box score now. I mean, only, you know, 4 assists and only 2 turnovers, in addition to how much he was handling the ball, how much attention he had. You know, just tremendous. Gino, you know, talked about Ohio State, where Gino was really bad from the floor the other night, 6-10, right? You know, 5 boards. I mean, really made an impact on both ends. Shep had a cold shooting night. You know, but again, it's still out there trying to do things. Julian, you know, was one of the games, obviously only those 5 minutes did not have an impact. Brandon makes some shots, doesn't shoot great overall, takes probably too many shots, but so I don't know. I mean, I feel it's like most of the same. You know, we know you get what you get out of DJ, you know, either Gino or Shep, you know, one of them tends to step up. If you get both of them going, maybe you got a shot. But even without Julian, you know, doing much, even with Brandon missing a lot of shots, you know, you're still right in it. So, I mean, it's one of those games where it's like, you know, the guys you have, for the most part, you're getting about as much as you reasonably can expect to get out of most of this roster. And so you're right in the game near the end. And, you know, you dig yourself a little bit of a hole and you fight back out of it. And then you get down to the last couple minutes of the game. And we said we're going to talk about that later, right?
Yeah, we will. And one thing that, like, I know, Ryan, you go to a lot of press conferences. I went to a lot of press conferences last year, and I've been to a few this year. And the thing that Pat Chambers always says, or he seems to say pretty frequently, is this team is close. We are close. And games like this are a really good example of that. Penn State, like you said, took a very good Maryland team and punched them in the mouth, and they got punched in the mouth, and it was just a heavyweight fight back and forth in both games. And Penn State kept getting close, but they couldn't quite get over the hump. And, Chad, do you think this game is a pretty good representation of that outside of some of the dubious officiating?
Yeah, it's a perfect representation of that. Just, you know, again, that goes back to the talent level. You know, Maryland's got freshman point guard who is probably one of the best point guards in the country. Dez Wells only played 24 minutes but had a huge game. Jake Lehman. Evan Smotrich, even, you know, these guys are they're pedigreed. You know, they have the ability, they have shooting, they have size, and they have skill. It's tough because Penn State, you know, they've been so good at home this year too, for the most part. Penn State, you know, every game they've played in has been close. They haven't been blown out really. I don't know. They are close. They are just so close. I don't know how else to put it. They just need something to get them over the hump, and they just don't have it this year for whatever reason, in the Big Ten anyways.
And Bill, if I can jump in, man, I mean, the one thing when you hear people, whenever you say that, when people say, oh, they're really close, like, people spin that how they want to spin it, right? People say, okay, well, we just want more player. We all know this, right? You know, that's a good thing, or it's, well, yeah, that's the sign that you're just not good enough, that you need a new coach, that you need this, you need that, whatever. I mean, I'm looking back over the schedule here right now, right? A four-point loss at Rutgers, in which they played awful. They played terrible basketball. It was right after New Year's in the break. It's not an excuse. It's just the fact that they played awful. They looked like they sleptwalked through half that game. And still, there was an awful, awful goaltending call in the last couple minutes of that one that played a huge role in a four-point game on the road. Michigan here, they were in that game until, what, 3, 4, 5 minutes left, and then Michigan's just got a couple of, again, long, talented, athletic guys like Ohio State who make some plays. And Indiana, three-point game. We remember that one. Purdue here, nothing else needs to be said. At Michigan State, again, that two-minute stretch with about 3 minutes left, you lose a six-point game on the road. Illinois, 2 points. At Maryland, 6 points, right? I mean, we know this is the run. You know, so many of these games have been winnable. And, yes, you can spin that both ways, but what you have to look at is if you look at the caliber of kids, for the most part, who Penn State has recruited versus who these other teams have recruited, and you look at – and, again, nobody can come in and be the full, like, neutral arbiter on who gets better calls and whatever. But if you look at all those key moments in so many of those games, I don't know how you can, unless you're one of these people who just wants to be negative, how you can't say, man, you know, with a couple of bounces of the ball and a couple of calls, this team right now could so easily be 7-6 in the league. They're so close to being that. It's like a handful of moments.
Going back to Chad's point, I think we were gifted this representation of the skill level at Maryland compared to the skill level at Penn State. John Graham would be Penn State. He could be Penn State starting center and playing 25 minutes a game if he stayed at Penn State, correct? Well, he could. So that probably would have happened, correct?
Awesome.
Instead,
yep.
Yeah, instead, he's at Maryland playing 13 minutes a game, averaging 2.8 points and 3.1 rebounds, and just really, I don't want to say a non-factor, but he's a guy who – If he has a bad game, you're not pointing to him and saying, oh, Maryland lost that game because of John Graham. He's just another guy for them, but he would have been a huge guy for Penn State. And it's just unfortunate, and it's part of the uphill battle that we always talk about, that Penn State, Pat Chambers and Penn State are fighting to become a good program. Let's get into this. Let's get into the bad foul call. Before we get into anything, here's a fun little stat. In the Pat Chambers era, Penn State is 8-19 in Big Ten games decided by two possessions or overtime. This has just been a team that has constantly had its heart ripped out, and there are times when it's just so frustrating to watch the end of games because, again, so close, can't get over the hump. They had a little help with that in this game against Maryland. The terrible foul call against Jordan Dickerson that sent Dickerson to the bench. Pat Chambers, full quote, I won't read the whole thing, but really for the first time during his tenure at Penn State, we heard him just completely go off on the refs.
Oh, second time.
And
Michigan State.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, this is the first time that I remember him just straight up saying, like, listen, this ref was horrible. Like, I don't ever remember him specifically calling anybody out. I do remember him against Michigan State saying, like, I'm not Tom Izzo, I'm not John Beilein, but he was, like, extra fired up after this.
Yeah.
And yeah. I think it's fair to say that a lot of it is just really bad officiating. But, Ryan, we'll start with you. Dan Dockich of ESPN, and I hate that I have to use him for an example. He said that it's a dirty little secret in basketball that different teams are officiated in different ways. Certain coaches get a little bit more favorable treatment, and Penn State's just not on that level. Is that something that you agree with?
I would disagree with the sense that it's a dirty little secret because I think anybody who pays attention to college basketball knows it. I think if you watch enough college basketball, you know that Mike Krzyzewski teams get calls that most teams don't get. You know that, you know, if you're old enough like me to remember, you know the Bobby Knight teams, you know, Calhoun teams, Boeheim teams, who else? Certainly, I mean, I think it, other than probably Krzyzewski right now, I think Tom Izzo teams, you know, are maybe the most blatant. And I say that with a level of respect. And that's, you know, one of the things about what happened in Michigan State, and it was not actually that dissimilar to what happened the other night with Maryland, because it was, I'm trying to remember exactly, but there was something under the basket where, didn't a Michigan State guy kind of pull somebody down underneath? It wasn't as blatant. It wasn't nearly as blatant. But there was a call that I think wasn't a call. I don't think it went the wrong way. Maybe it did. And then there was, like, right after that, a minute later, there was, like, a moving screen call. And so those aren't quite as obvious to what, as what happened the other night. But, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are certain guys who it's a couple things. It's one, it's coaches with a huge reputation. Again, because these are not full-time refs. This isn't the NBA. You know, some of these guys are half the ages of some of these veteran coaches, and these coaches are prominent, particularly when they're at home. It takes something that the average college basketball ref probably doesn't have, as far as like intestinal fortitude, to be able to make a tough call against the Tom Izzo team at Michigan State in the final minutes of a close game. That's hard to do. All the emotions that go into that, I absolutely believe, conscious or not, that's tough for guys. And so whether it's the refs berating him or whatever, I mean, whether it's the coaches berating the refs or whether it's the fans or whether it's the coach's reputation, whatever it is, a lot of those guys just don't have it in them to make that call. And then in addition, you have the way a guy like Izzo coaches, which I admire and respect, but he coaches his team at a more physical level than most coaches do. And their baseline defense, I don't mean literally the baseline of the court, but like they're like the lowest level of their defensive physicality is much higher than most teams. So, and refs get used to that and they reset that in their heads consciously or not. And they ref accordingly. So Michigan State defenders get away with more because you coach it up that level. You know, it's like the joke we always say with football in the Big Ten. If you hold every play, well, they can't call all of them, right? Well, it's the same thing with Michigan State when they trap you or buy you in the post or whatever. And, again, I'm not even hating. I respect that because he coaches a level of intensity in those guys, and it works. So there's absolutely no question that certain guys get that respect and certain home crowds engender that respect. And on the flip side, certain coaches in certain places don't. We all know the history of Penn State basketball here. There's a litany of reasons, and I've probably listened to both of you guys, and you guys know them yourselves, but why Penn State doesn't have the history. And that pays off, and they don't have the respect. And I'm sure Pat knows that. I'm sure Pat knows that as factually as you can know something that you can't actually prove as fact. And so, yeah, I think it's totally valid. And the only thing you can do, like Pat said the other night, is play so well and work so hard that you negate that disadvantage. And that's so much easier said than done. And I think they're trying to do it. And I think the fact that they get close as often as they do is a testament to how hard that group is working as a staff and players. But to make that, to finally get over that hump with the players you have and the reputation you have is just really, really, really hard.
What, you don't think refs look up at the 1954 Final Four banner next to the 2009 NIT banner and go, wow, this is one prestigious program?
You guys, again, dating myself here, I went to the Pearl Jam show at the Jordan Center, like, I don't know, it's been about 10 years now.
Who's Pearl Jam?
Like, thank you.
Pearl Jam's the
podcast.
One with Kurt Cobain, right?
Get off my podcast lawn, you kids. This was like 10 years ago, and at the time it was like the longest Pearl Jam show they'd ever played. I think they have since surpassed. It was a great show, and so it was funny, though, because like the guys in Pearl Jam were like famously, a couple of them were famously big basketball fans. They used to play, Jeff Ament, the bass player, used to put starting lineup figurines on top of his bass amp when he played shows. Like, they were just big hoop fans. Used to wear Jordans on stage and stuff. And we were, you know, he was like joking about how, like, you know, usually they go into arenas and they see like all these banners, and then they just had like the one tiny little banner up of the quarterback then. It was just like such, like, even the rock bands are mocking Penn State's lack of basketball history. Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, that answers the question, right?
We are. One little thing that I do want Chad to weigh in on, something that Pat said. if I don't complain, Neubel would have never gotten to the line because Trimble gets there 12 times and he's a freshman and he's on the road. It's a joke the way we're officiated. So kind of two parts. One, like, and I'm giving this to you just because this is a softball. Is it a joke the way that Penn State is officiated? And two, what do you think about Pat's statement about freshmen getting calls on the road compared to veteran guys getting calls at home? Like, is that something that he thinks should happen, or is that something that he thinks does happen and just doesn't happen against when Penn State is the team at all on the road or whatever?
That was a really long and complicated question, so I'm just going to say some stuff anyways.
Sorry.
Yeah,
about that.
I mean, I'm used to it. He has to start, you know, say something about, you know, Neubel not getting fouled because or else, you know, the refs aren't going to call it. That's just how it works. You have to work the officials to some degree to, you know, in the hope that it pays off down the road. You know, you're never going to get a call changed when you argue it the first time, but you're just playing at sea and hoping that eventually, you know, ref will see a similar play like that and call it in your favor that time. So, yeah, you know, he's definitely right that he has to do that. It's a shame he has to do it in the first place because, you know, in an ideal world, the officials will get every call right, obviously, and not make, you know, not play favorites, not give star treatment to certain players, whatever. But and the Melo Trimble thing, I kind of disagree with him there because, you know, Trimble does get to the line a lot. That's been his MO since we got to Maryland. He gets to the line at a crazy rate. I'm going to look it up here real quick. But he is, you know, that's just what he does. And for him to call him out like that, you know, Maryland fans, if they have any reason to be upset, I guess that's kind of one thing they can point to and say, well, look at these stats. You know, this guy, he gets to the rate, gets to the foul line at a 73% rate. And 73% of his field goal attempts are like free throws. He's 37th in the country in that regard. So, you know, to a certain extent, he's right. He's wrong there. But then again, you know, I guess he does get star treatment as a freshman. And that's a little strange in college basketball, considering he's not really like, you know, one of those five-star guys that, you know, you have at Kentucky or something like that. But, yeah, you know, it was definitely the wrong call for him to call that Anderson. And, yeah, go ahead.
So do you think, just in that regard, Pat was saying it's garbage that we don't get the star calls, or do you think he was saying, listen, this is the way college basketball should be, and when freshmen are shooting 11 or 12 free throws on the road, there's something wrong with that? Because that's kind of the one thing that I was a little bit confused on with his diatribe.
I think that was more of just an overall frustration of like the way things are with officiating, you know, that it has to come to that point where he has to complain about a freshman getting 12 free throw attempts on the road. Not so much that, like, I don't know, it's not that he's getting called like that. It's just the way that it is. I don't know. That he has to complain about it all for it to like, you know, be brought up. I don't know.
I think,
yeah,
you know,
that,
I think
that was good.
Yeah, go ahead. Well, I think there's, we know this, right? There's like a hierarchy, and you see it in the NBA, and you see it in college,
right,
too. Like, if you're a senior and you're an established guy who's played at like an all Big Ten level for a couple of years, you expect you're going to get benefit of the doubt more than a freshman is. So, I mean, again, like Chad said exactly, this is primarily the frustration of what Pat, you know, saw and was dealing with coming out. I mean, I think that was my tweet. I was like, man, you know, he may have to wait until he sees the film to realize how bad he really got, you know, just – taken on this one. I mean, it's been more obvious on the court in front of him. I didn't know if he was going to have a clear look at it, you know, live there. But, you know, like I said, there's that hierarchy. And if you have, like, if the other team, you know, comes in, you know, if it's Jared Soldier a couple years ago at Ohio State coming in, like, you know, the guy's going to be a consensus All-American. Even though he's only a freshman, you know he's going to get calls. Or if you've got a guy, you know, who's a senior who sticks around, like DJ, who's been a really, really good player for a couple years, you expect him to get calls. And when you feel like your own guy is not getting calls and the other team's freshman on the road is getting calls, like, that throws off the hierarchy. You know, that's like, well, at least let us count on consistency on these certain levels. And I think it's gotten to the point where, again, emotionally, you know, that skews it a little bit from a coach's perspective, I'm sure. But when you feel like even given the hierarchy of the way these things work, we're not getting the benefit of the doubt at home, like, that's where it gets, like, next-level frustration.
All right. kind of my last thing before we maybe get back to the game or jump on to something else, I don't know. Between that and there was the one call you talked about with the elbow that should have been a technical or whatever, Chad, what was that about?
Oh, it was right before that Dickerson foul. Brandon Taylor came down with the rebound, and Jake Lehman kind of, like, left the ball and got him in the eye or in the face a little bit. That was the play in question, I think.
And
they reviewed it even, but they didn't find anything, so that was a little strange. I know Ryan was right.
What's that?
Yeah, Ryan.
The stance by a lot of people, and Pat was one of them, was if that happens to Penn State, it's called a technical or it's at least a foul and they didn't call it, whatever it was. So in a perfect world, we would expect maybe something maybe Pat Chambers is screaming from the top of the rooftops and someone in the Big Ten office is going to listen, and the way Penn State gets officiated changes somehow. Ryan, do you expect that to happen at all?
You know, I don't know. I mean, coaches and ADs tend to be pretty quiet about, you know, how blatantly they address these things with their leagues, you know, for obvious reasons. You don't want to rock the boat too much within your league. You know, everybody's trying to coexist happily and everybody's making lots of money, and, you know, being within the league, it's good for Penn State. You know, after losses like the other night, I know there were people like, oh, is it time to join the ACC or whatever. It's like, let's be realistic. On a lot of levels, you know, for whatever else, like, you know, on a lot of levels, being in the Big Ten, certainly financially, it's been a real boost for Penn State for a long time now. There's a ton of money there. Certainly the fact that, you know, we draw what we draw for basketball, and that's still a profitable sport because of the Big Ten TV deal. And that doesn't even get to the Big Ten football money and whatever. So we're not going anywhere, I don't think. You know, I don't know. My hope and my thought and my assumption, I guess, is that behind the scenes, you know, coaches and ADs are able to sort of build a case and say, you know, in whatever way it's presented, whether it's at the coaches' meetings, probably not out loud, or, you know, behind the scenes, like, listen, there's like this laundry list of times where in key moments of games, of close games, like calls went against us, and they were often either at least borderline, if not really bad calls. At what point can we sort of make a case on this and try to get the word to the officiating administration and say, listen, like, what's going on here? You know, we could talk about this all night, and I don't think there's an active conspiracy of Big Ten officials against Penn State basketball, but at the same time, I am old enough to remember Sam Licklider in 1993 in Indiana at Rec Hall. So, you know, there is previous on all this. So, I don't know. I hope that you know, whatever can be done behind the scenes is being done. But I don't know if it changes. Honestly, the thing you do, the same way that you change getting more people to come to games, is you start winning more. And so that's what's tough. You say, in spite of the obstacles, let's figure out a way to win more. And if you can do that, then I think, you know, things start breaking your way more often. But it's hard to do.
Great. Just a quick point about the officials. Just a quick point. You know, there are no quote-unquote Big Ten officials. It's just whoever's available, really. You know, there are certain guys who, like, do the same Big Ten teams, you know. They'll ref those games a bunch, but there's no centralized, like, Big Ten basketball officials headquarters or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, maybe they should look into that. I'd certainly be for that to get some consistency with the officiating on a more, consistent basis. But, you know, that's a problem that's a college basketball problem. That's not just a Big Ten problem, you know. You have, you know, when you play a game on a Saturday, too, you know, there are how many games in college basketball going on, and there's only a certain amount of officials that, you know, are up to the quality that you would expect for, you know, most high-major programs. So sometimes, you know, you get officials that are less experienced. I know the guy Pat called out was, you know, he had, you know, 4 years of experience as an official, so, and something like 14 games as a Big Ten official. So, you know, it's not just a Penn State problem. It is a college basketball-wide problem for programs like Penn State, I guess you could say, but that's the spiel.
Yeah. So do you expect Penn State to be officiated any differently, whether in a positive way or you know, the refs coming together saying, hey, fuck those guys, we're going to turn a blind eye to them a little more often?
No, I think it's kind of the same way, you know, he talked about getting on the officials for not calling a foul on Newball, and then he got a foul calling him a couple plays later that he had a drive against Shakovsky that was probably a block, a clean block by Shakovsky, but called a foul, so something like that works. And I think, you know, it kind of works in the long run, too. I thought it would be after the Michigan State little spiel there, but hasn't really done that apparently, so hopefully this will have the same kind of effect where it's, you know, it's not like a conscious decision on the referee's part either, like Ryan was saying before, you know.
Yeah.
It's just in their subliminal or in their subconscious that, oh, wait, they should get some calls here, or, you know, maybe they shouldn't because they're not. It's just Penn State, so nobody cares. But, yeah.
Well, hopefully there's some change. I mean, nothing massive, but, you know, hopefully some, whether it's this year, whether it's down the road, Penn State isn't on the receiving end of bad calls, or just as a basketball fan, hopefully there are no bad calls. But that's kind of it for last week's slate of games. Let's jump into this week's slate of games. Penn State has two contests coming up on Wednesday. There's going to be a bloodbath in the Bryce Jordan Center because Penn State hosts Wisconsin, which is unquestionably the best team in the Big Ten. One of the best teams in the college basketball. If they don't make a Final Four, it would be a bit of a surprise. And then on Saturday, a very interesting matchup with one of the few teams in the Big Ten that are worse than Penn State in Northwestern. So let's go right into Wisconsin. Ryan, does Penn State have any chance of winning this game?
Absolutely. I think we're due. And this is the all that Chad give the much smarter stat breakdown informed take because he's more capable of it than I am. But Penn State gets, you know, and a lot of teams do, we tend to get one of these a year or so, and I think we're due right now. And I think, you know, you never know how the frustration of tough losses is going to build up in practices. You know, they certainly took a rough run out on Rutgers here a few weeks ago. Obviously, Wisconsin is not Rutgers, but that's okay. They don't have to beat them by 20-something. You know, but, I mean, we all know. We've seen a lot of these over the years where they managed to pull out a win over a good team. This would be the biggest win in a while, no question. But I think if they come out with confidence and, you know, God forbid if the BJC pipes don't freeze and we can get a decent crowd in there, you know, yeah, I think they got a shot. You know, they have to play very, very well. They have to play patient defensively. You know, my God, they've got to be patient on defense and they've got to work their tails off and guys have to make shots. You know, it's the one thing about basketball, right? As we all know, when you boil it down simply enough, if you can defend and you can make shots, then anybody can beat anybody. So I just feel like they're due for a game like that, and that's not based on anything other than I feel like they're due. But, yeah, I think they're going to shot at home, absolutely.
Very Bayless-ian for you to go on gut feeling these mm-hmm. out of facts, Ryan.
Mm-hmm. He's my hero. You know that. He's my idol, my role model.
Yeah,
Skip all day.
Yes, I have actually been to Ryan's house, and he has a picture of Skip wearing a rosary above his bed, so I'm fully aware of this. And
yes.
So, Chad, want to be a little more reasoned and nuanced in whether or not Penn State has a chance against Wisconsin?
Sure. Okay, so Wisconsin has the best offense Ken Pomeroy has tracked since 2002. They're scoring 1.25 points per possession. In the Big Ten, it's actually better. They're scoring 1.26 points per possession. that's really good by comparison. 1.02 points per possession.
Nerd.
They don't turn the ball
over.
They're the best team in the country not turning the ball over. The best team in the country not getting the shots blocked. The best team in the country not getting the ball stolen from them. Penn State has to play their absolute best game they've played since that Michigan game 2 years ago. There's no other way to slice it. Wisconsin is just a juggernaut right now. They're destroying teams. It's got to be a great defensive effort, like Ryan said. It's got to be. They have to shoot well. They have to shoot the lights out really, because Wisconsin's not gonna, you know, they're not gonna be held to anything less than like 1.2 points per possession. So they really have to shoot the lights out. I mean, they've done it before. And it's not like Wisconsin is, you know, a great defensive team because, you know, Penn State had put up 72 points on them at Wisconsin. So they've done it before, but they really have to play out of their mind on defense and shoot really well on offense to have a chance.
Yeah, and this isn't one of those games where Penn State being a quote-unquote bad team will be its downfall. It's that Wisconsin is just so good, and they do so many things well on offense that it's really hard to imagine Penn State being able to keep up with them unless they get hot for the field, which could certainly happen. Let's look at the first game that these two teams played this year. As Chad said, it was in Wisconsin. It was on New Year's Eve. And Penn State, relatively speaking, played pretty well against the Badgers. They were down 43-36 at the half, lost 89-72, which for what you expect out of Penn State going on the road against one of the five best teams in college basketball, you don't really expect Penn State to look that good on offense. So let's go back to that game. Ryan, was there anything in that game that you remember that maybe makes you think, hey, maybe Penn State could do something here?
I'm old enough that you should have given me warning before asking me about something that happened 2.5 months ago. That's just
okay,
not fair.
Okay, Chad.
That's really respectful.
No, let's start with Chad then.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ryan.
I mean, Chad made the point, you know, is the fact that you can score that many points, and you look at the 89 given up, and that's like, you know, and that's rough. And so, you know, the pace there, it's like that 72 points, you know, doesn't look as good when you consider the pace, and it certainly doesn't look as good when you consider, you know, I'm just looking back at it now, right? Shot 64% in the first half and 44% in the second. I don't know. Again, that was first, but you knew that was going to be ugly. I mean, you knew that they were going to get, there was, of all the games in this entire schedule, this was the one starting out, you know, given the timing of it, New Year's Eve on the road to start in the league, like you knew they were going to get beat up. You just knew. And so, I mean, it's kind of like that Ohio State game the other night in the sense that I don't put, like, because they were supposed to lose by 20, like, I felt like losing by 17 was, like, almost a little bit of a win. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's ridiculous intentionally. But
cover the spread.
Yeah,
cover the spread.
There you go. So, I just think that – and that's why, you know, again, I'm getting back to gut feeling here, which I'm acknowledging the silliness of even as I say it. But, like, you know, I just feel like the difference between that timing and that situation, let alone being on the road versus this timing and this situation back at home, is, like, is substantial. And so that's why I think they have a shot. But again, I'll let Chad give a smarter answer about how that game actually went and what it means for this one.
Go ahead, Chad.
Yeah, I mean, they played offensively, they played reasonably as well as you'd expect them to play. You know, they were, it was only 63 possessions in that game. So 72 points, that's a pretty reasonable total. You know, most times on the road, that gets you at least a close loss, if not a win. But they're just, like Frank Kaminsky, Nigel Hayes, they're so awesome as college basketball players. I don't know what you guys think about Frank Kaminsky in the pros, but he is like one of the best college big men I've seen in years. I don't know. He's crazy. Bronson Cain's really come in, and he's like given a new dimension at the point guard. Trayvon Jackson's hurt. Caney can stroke it from deep. He's a really good passer, too. He's a really good ball handler. They didn't really lose anything with Jackson out, so I mean they're not as deep as they were, considering they have to start Koenig now, so they don't have quite the guard depth, but still they have, you know, Josh Gosser, D.A. Dukin, you know, just so many guys who hit the three and so many guys who are weapons. You know, they just have to play one of their best games of the season to get a close game out of this one. So I don't know, that's pretty much it.
So, cross your fingers and pray. That's
yeah.
That's Penn State. That's our. That's what we're doing heading into this. The game where Penn State, we've a little bit more optimism, is on Saturday. The Nittany Lions travel to Evanston to take on Northwestern, and Northwestern isn't an especially good basketball team. They have moments where they're pretty solid, like they were able to take down Iowa a little bit over the weekend. Apologies for that. But they're 11-14 this year. They're 2-10 in the conference. They have some pretty strange losses. Like Northern Iowa was a fine team, but they lost by 19 to them. So, Chad, how optimistic are you about this game?
First off, don't ever apologize for an Iowa loss. second off,
yeah,
I really hope Doug Collins is there again, because that'd be great.
Adam Woodbury didn't poke anyone in the eye this week, so that's good.
Here we
and
go.
That'll
yeah.
be,
positive.
That will be the main theme of next week's show.
Yes.
Which Penn State player is Adam Woodbury going to poke in the eye?
Northwestern. They've been pretty bad all year, except for that last game against Iowa. They weren't really that great, considering how bad Iowa played. They have some guys that haven't really progressed as you'd think they would. Tershawn Cobb's been out recently, but he hasn't really played that well. You know, so I saw some people had him on like their top 100 list of players when without DJ Nibble on those lists. So he's a little bit overrated at this point. Trey Demps is the college basketball version of, I guess, Marcus Thornton is the most apt comparison I could think of. Just jack shots whenever he gets a chance. Alex Ola is like the only competent big man. Brian McIntosh is really impressive as a freshman point guard. I like what he has. He's a good shooter. He's a good ball handler. Really good passer. Shame for him he doesn't have the players that can put the ball in the hoop, but they're tough out at home. I don't think it's a given game for Penn State that they'll win. They have to play well on the road. You know, they haven't won a game on the road the Big Ten road this year, so they'll have to play well. But I think they can do it if they come out and Basher, they blew them out pretty easily on Northwestern senior night. If they can get that kind of effort again, especially on defense, they'll have a good chance to win.
Yeah, Ryan, I don't know about you, but I haven't really watched Northwestern this year, and part of this is just because, like, I have no desire to watch Northwestern play basketball. Like, how much of the Wildcats have
Bill,
you
I don't,
seen?
I don't yeah. think you need to say anything more than that. I think you said it all right there.
the only reason that I ever watched Northwestern is because one of Ryan and I's friends at Slam, like this guy named Abe, went there, and it's fun to bust his balls. But like, that is literally the only reason I ever check out Northwestern. And the very little that I have watched this year, they just haven't been that good. So Ryan, like, where is your confidence level heading into the Northwestern game?
I mean, I'll say the one, and again, not for the second or third time even tonight, certainly not the first, dating myself here, in that I remember watching the Northwestern team where guys got busted for point shaving in the early mid-90s. I remember seeing that team in person. And the one guy was Dewey Williams, I think, who got in. Do you guys even remember that this happened?
No, sorry. I was like 5 years old, dude.
I didn't know Northwestern was ever, like, capable of pulling off a point-shaving scandal. I always assumed that was, like, some level of confidence that came with that.
Chad, do me a favor. While I'm talking here, Google Northwestern basketball point-shaving and tell me the guy whose name was Dewey, what his full name was, or a couple guys. But this is my era that I remember as a student fan myself, was watching these Northwestern teams. And even then, when they were shaving points, so for 20-plus years now, I've always thought of Northwestern as the team that Penn State should be winning at least one, if not two, games from every season at Northwestern. And I don't think that's changed a whole lot. I mean, the fact that, you know, Collins is there and he's obviously got the pedigree and all that, and, as both a coach and a Dukie, I mean, you know, if anybody can do it, he technically should be able to. But, they still play in a little bandbox gym, right? And I'm not criticizing that because obviously that's kind of a cool thing. But, they're just one of those programs that always, you know, every two or three years they get one kid who's kind of good. And otherwise they're just mostly not very good. And Bill, like you, I've not watched them this season. I think I saw about 3 minutes of one game on BTN, and I changed it because I think there was a There was maybe a Fall Out Boy on Palladia that my kids wanted to watch. Concert, so I switched over. So, Chad just gave the breakdown, and it's one of those teams that they're not a very good team. And at home, okay, that gives them a little bit of an edge. But this Penn State team, again, this is one of those few winnable ones. And with a guy like DJ, who's going to be the best player on the floor, you hope that's an opportunity for him to kind of take over and for this team to figure out a way to win one. So, yeah, I'm hopeful.
Dewey Williams was his name. Ryan.
Dewey Williams, right? Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And one of the games they cited in this New York Times article is a home game against Penn State where they lost by more than the point spread.
Yeah, that was
they only got $4,000 out of it, though.
Well, again, say those Northwestern kids are smart, but I think we know better.
Coming into this year, I knew really about three Northwestern guys. One was four Northwestern guys, including Dave Sobolewski, who was just, an exponentially worse Greg Paulus. But Alex Ola, he was just like this big, awkward, goofy dude who was never especially, spectacular. Like, his number one thing that he brought to the table was that he was huge. One was Jershon Cobb, who a lot of people expected to make a leap, and he just hasn't really done it this year, and he's out. Is he going to play this week? Or is that up in the air, Chad?
I'm not sure.
All right.
I don't
And then
know.
Trey Depp, who is a perfectly – no, it's fine. All good, buddy. And Trey Jeffs, who's a perfectly fine basketball player. So, Chad, are there any guys on Northwestern who really, I don't want to say make you nervous, but make you go, hey, he is liable to break out because he is a really good basketball player?
Brian McIntosh, like I said before, freshman, he's really impressed me so far this year. I don't try to watch Northwestern, but, when they're on, I'll keep the game on because I have no life whatsoever. He's a top 100 in the country in assist rate, especially on 30% of the team's field goals when he's on the floor. Good 3-point shooter, good at driving to the rim. And for a freshman, Northwestern doesn't have players like that really who come in as freshmen and lead the team in most major categories. So he's definitely one to watch for, if not this year, the future. They're building something there. They got some good recruiting classes coming in. Just unfortunately right now they're still dealing with the leftovers of the Bill Carmody era. So they're not, like you guys said, they're not a great team, but they're definitely capable of beating Penn State at home. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's another close one because, they do have some talent. And I do like Chris Collins as a coach. The way his teams play defense, they're always going to be in games. So, I don't know if it should be a win for Penn State, but they're definitely capable of winning it.
If you actually say Bill Carmody's name three times, a Northwestern fan will come and beat you to death with a calculator, so be careful on that. So what do you think this week, Chad? Are we going is Penn State going to go 2-0, 1-1, 0-2?
1-1.
1-1, what about yourself, Ryan?
Can I hope against hope for a road win? I guess 1-1 is like the safe thing, right?
Ken Pom has a 0-2. He does think the Northwestern game is basically a toss-up. But there's a – yeah, it should be an interesting week. Ryan, before we kind of bounce, what are your thoughts on – Penn State making some kind of postseason? I don't think we know the NCAA tournament probably isn't going to happen. The NIT seems like it's a bit out of reach right now. I don't know what our friends over at Big Apple Hoops or whatever it is, what they think about it. And the CBI, we had Chad say last week that if Penn State gets invited to that, they shouldn't go. So where do you kind of stand on Penn State in some kind of postseason birth? What do you think will happen, and what do you want to happen realistically?
Well, I mean, what I want to happen realistically, I think is, it's figuring out a way to win, was it three regular season left or five? I mean, I'm sorry, five regular season left. Northwestern's real winnable, Iowa's real winnable at home, Ohio State at home, maybe Minnesota's not that good. So let's say four out of the five remaining are winnable. You know, let's say you win three of them and you win a Big Ten game and you end up with, you know, what would that put us at here? I'm bad at math. You know, 19 wins, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think a 19-win Big Ten team, you know, makes the NIT, you know, regardless, and maybe an 18-win Big Ten team still does as well. I mean, that to me seems like a no-brainer. And, yeah, you certainly go to the NIT, and you certainly try and, you know, play as many games you can and try and go win the damn thing. Penn State's, you know, it is what it is. Penn State's played a lot of NITs and won a fair amount of NIT games over the years. So I think that would certainly be nice. I think if you if the best you can do is a CBI, yeah, I don't see a lot of benefit to even go into that. I mean, it gets down to, you know, from a coaching staff and a team perspective, do you want to give those guys a chance to play one or two or whatever more games regardless? Or, you know, I don't know how that goes down within a team, but I don't think there'd be any excitement for that among the fan base. So, yeah, I mean, I think realistically you hope for like a 3-3 finish or, you know, 4-4, whatever, depending on how far you go into the conference tournament and a chance to win close to 20 games, you know, potentially. It's not that far-fetched to think this could be a 20-win team, you know, with a postseason win somewhere. And so that would still be something, you know, for as disappointing as this has been in stretches, given the start and how tough the Big Ten slate has been with all these close losses, you know, this could still be a 20-win team, and that's something to hang your hat on in college basketball. You know, again, certainly for a program where Penn State is right now. So, yeah, I think that's the hope right now. I think, you know, you get to the NIT and you win at least a couple games and you end up with like 21 wins and that's some progress.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at this right now, and the disclaimer is this was done last Friday, Friday the 13th. The website bracketmatrix.com, which is apparently a thing, no offense to them, did a NIT bracketology thing, and it actually had Penn State as an 8 seed. I don't know how that's going to change, if it has changed at all, but that would certainly be nice because I think – I know Chad basically with you, and I'm pretty much with you, and I don't know what the CBI could give the team other than a few practices, and if they don't win it, make it a laughingstock. But, yeah, I think we're all hoping that that Penn State's able to pull a rabbit out of the hat and do something something we don't see coming, because I'm what's the word I'm looking for? Checked out for the most part in the season. Like, it's just been really this has been tough, but hey, it happens. So that's really it. Any Chad? Any parting thoughts from you?
No, not really. Let's get out of here.
Let's get out of here. Awesome, Ryan. Any parting thoughts?
Extend Pat. I don't know. What else? That's it, right?
Yes. Yep.
Certainly. Yeah, not a bad way to go out. Thank you again to Ryan Jones for joining us. We really appreciate you taking the time to goof around with us on this podcast. As always,
yeah,
thank you very much. Not a problem. As always, thank you very much for listening. We really appreciate you taking some time to listen to what we have to say about Penn State basketball. As always, get out, go to games, support the team. The game against Wisconsin is going to be tough, but one way to make it a little less tough is to give Penn State some semblance of a home court advantage. That's it for this week. Take care, everyone. Have a good week.